Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. First, we're going to talk about the Fed action that's going to happen this week. Then we're going to look at some new proposed legislation around rollovers and the fiduciary standard. Then I'm going to compare investors to people who attend the state fair. And then finally, in the Ask Peggy section, we're going to talk about withholding enough tax this year so you don't have a bad tax liability next April. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the week that ended September 12th, 2025. I'm sorry I've been gone a couple of weeks. I've been doing some fun book-related traveling, financial planning-related traveling, and I'll tell you more about that in the last section of the show. But the markets did fine while I was gone. The Dow was up 0.8%, while the S&P 500 was up about 1.86%. The NASDAQ was up about 2.3%, while gold was up 0.7%. Oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price, was up 1.31%. Current price of a barrel is $62.69. The dollar was down 0.07%, and the 10-year treasury was down 0.5%, and that current rate is 4.038%. The aggregate bond fund, that is the ETF that tracks the 10-year treasury as well as other government bonds, was up about 0.5%. So when the 10-year treasury went down 0.5, the aggregate bond fund went up 0.45. That's interesting because usually it feels like the 10-year works at a multiple of the aggregate bond fund. So it's interesting they moved about the same amount but in opposite directions this week. Bitcoin was up 2.19%, and the VIX was up a little over 1%. So this is the week. So this show is airing originally on September 15th. I know sometimes I use shows more than once, so I want to make sure the timing of this is correct. This is the week that we're expecting something from the Federal Reserve on whether or not they're going to lower interest rates. And I want to set expectations a little bit. So the first thing I want you to realize is we've got conflicting numbers out there. We have jobs data that came in very much under what was anticipated, while we have inflation that came in very much over what was anticipated last week with the CPI numbers. The week ahead of that, the PPI had come in better than anticipated, but they're actually measuring different things. Last week's CPI measure, Consumer Price Index, that's the inflation measure that everybody knows, came in much higher than anticipated, and rates, rather than approaching the Fed's 2% ideal rate, are actually closer to 2.9% for the inflation rate. So when the president spoke recently saying that everything was perfect for a big interest rate cut, I think it's possible that maybe he is not listening to all of the information that he's getting. Maybe he's had other things other than economics that he's been looking at. But what I will say is just based off of the data, which is all anybody can use to make these decisions, it's a conflicting story, and I can imagine a scenario where the Fed doesn't cut rates this week because of the inflation data, which is always such a concern for the Fed. The Fed is on record saying they worry slightly more about inflation than they do unemployment. We will see. Now, do I think there's going to be an interest rate cut this week? I actually do. I think there's so much pressure for the Fed to cut rates. I'm anticipating a Fed rate cut this week. Now, let me help you understand what a really big cut would be. And I'm using the term really big cut because that was the term the president used, and I really want to set expectations. A really big cut would be 0.5%. Okay, the only time I've seen the Fed move more than that has been after catastrophic situations, truly catastrophic situations, and we haven't had any of those. I'm talking events like September 11th that we remembered last week, other major market-rocking events. Otherwise, a big Fed cut is 0.5%. A normal cut, which is what I think they're going to do, is 0.25%. And the reason I don't think they go higher than 0.25% is because of that inflation data. But I do think there will be a 0.25% cut. Interestingly, the 10-year Treasury yield dropped by 0.5% last week. They're also anticipating something happening. Now, a couple of things about that to point out. First, the minute the market thinks it knows what direction things are going in, it acts. The market is, by definition, a leading indicator, which means the market doesn't wait for the data to come in before it acts. Investors like to try to get ahead of the market, and the minute they think they know what the market is doing, they go ahead and do something. They take action. This is why it's more than possible after the Fed announced that they're cutting rates, when you would expect the 10-year Treasury to drop, it might go up because it may have done its cut last week. And if they cut by 0.5% and the Fed cuts by 0.25%, then in fact, the markets may go up because the bond markets may go up because the cut was slightly less than they were hoping it would be. I am hearing more than one voice saying they're not going to cut. So when I'm expecting a 0.25% cut, I'm actually being fairly bullish on a rate cut. You know, I tend to be a little bit more bullish in the stock market than I am in the bond market. I think the bond market is much more likely to be concerned. I think the bond market listens more than the stock market does. If, in fact, the Fed were to cut by a 0.25% on whatever day it is this week, it's later on into the week, I'm not sure what the stock market's going to do in response to that. Because usually, remember, a Fed rate cut is done because things aren't going well. And so, yes, the unemployment numbers are super tricky, and I know a lot of people who are starting to feel the outcome from that. I was watching some business news this morning, and they were saying major manufacturers have cut down on their hiring, and in fact, some are laying people off. So, you know, those jobs numbers are disturbing. I don't know if the market's going to be happy with a 0.25% cut. Now, I have heard the president say he is expecting a 2% rate cut. You know, rates are roughly 4, right? And so he's expecting it to a 2% rate cut. I will tell you right now that I absolutely positively do not expect that to happen. A 2% rate cut would be the biggest rate cut I have ever seen, and it followed a horrific event which did not lead to a 2% cut. A really big cut should be 0.5%. I don't know what happens if, in fact, the big cut is 0.5%, and the president wanted 2%, I'm not really sure what happens if that happens. There will be a disconnect in expectations. What I am telling you is no rate cut is not off the table. A 0.25% rate cut is the most likely option. A 0.5% rate cut would be pretty darn staggering. Anything over that is phenomenally unlikely. Now, we'll have to wait and see what happens on Tuesday. If it is a 2% rate cut, I'll apologize next week. But if it isn't, do not be surprised, because that would not be normal market behavior.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And we are, yet again, talking about the fiduciary duty that is due to someone when they are rolling out of a company retirement plan and into an IRA, either at the custodian that held the original plan or somewhere else. So let's try to put this in way of an example to make that make a little bit more sense. And I'm choosing a custodian I don't think exists. So it would be something like Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard or any of the other like brokerage houses you have heard of would be where the actual plan would be held. But I want to use something hypothetical because I'm not criticizing anybody. I just want you to understand what happens. So let's assume that Mary retires and has a 401k at ABC Custodian. Okay, so she works for a company, and that company chose to house the 401k plan at ABC Custodian. And now that she's retiring, ABC Custodian is saying, and let's assume she has quite a bit of money. Let's say she has $100,000 or more in her account. So what happens then is ABC Custodian may reach out, or they might not, and say, hey, you have this 401k, you might want to roll it out of the company plan and put it into an IRA also at ABC Custodian. So then it would stop being a 401k plan. It would start becoming, it would start becoming an IRA, but at the same custodian. And a lot of bigger custodians have the ability to do that. Let's assume that also Mary knows Fred, who is a financial advisor, and Fred says, hey, Mary, I can manage your IRA for you so you don't have to. I know you don't want to, so you can go ahead and we'll open a IRA at my custodian, some other company, not ABC, and roll your IRA into that. Well, whether Mary chooses to roll it into the IRA at ABC Company or with her friend Fred, there is no longer potentially a fiduciary responsibility of either the same company or Fred that her money had when it was in the 401k plan. So when you have a company retirement plan, there's an automatic fiduciary duty that goes with that money. It's just part of how the laws are written. This is why most brokerage firms will not give you advice on how to invest that money, because if they give you that advice, they are picking up that fiduciary mantle that lots and lots of firms don't want. Now, I'm not directly responsible for any of this, but I certainly do have a side here. We have been pushing for a long time that clients don't understand that when you are not a fiduciary, you do not have a legal liability to act in the client's best legal interest. The fiduciary standard is a legal standard, as opposed to the new regulation that passed here a few years ago that really gums up the understanding, where they call it Regulation BI. BI stands for best interest. However, it is not the legal fiduciary duty. So there's been a big push to make sure that once money has a fiduciary standard, that standard holds when you roll it, so that if Mary moves the money to an IRA at her current custodian, or she gives it to Fred, Both of those organizations have to hold a fiduciary standard with this money. If she leaves it in the 401k, it maintains its fiduciary status. So that means anybody who helps her with it legally has to be a fiduciary. Well, it really kind of looked like it had become settled law until the election. And now Daniel Aronowitz, who is President Trump's choice to lead the Labor Department, Employee Benefits, Security Administration, is opposed to this when, in fact, Fred maybe only rolls the account over into an IRA. He said that that in and of itself, and there is a chorus of voices saying that that should not trigger a fiduciary responsibility. Here are so many problems with that. First of all, it is likely that the most money Mary has in her life in the stock market is in that 401k. And you can completely lose the fiduciary status and actually just put it into something that works best for the advisor at the time of the rollover. So if in fact there is a high commissioned product that Fred wants to put it into, and that's all he's going to do with the account is help Mary get it out of this and put it into an IRA, then he can do it because they're saying a one-time behavior doesn't require a fiduciary standard. In fact, they're saying they may vacate that whole idea altogether so that these advisors don't have to worry about that. We'll have to watch and see how it plays out. Right now, my money is on that outcome. So we're going to have to wait and see where we go from here. The other problem I have with this is acting like you would give your retirement money to someone who would never meet with you again. So if you've rolled over your account to an advisor, I believe you should have an ongoing relationship with that person. But apparently, and it still just shocks me, there's lots and lots of accounts out there that don't really have ongoing care, or the advisor rolls it into a third-party portfolio manager. So basically, the advisor does absolutely nothing, again, except continue to get money from that transaction. So I have an issue that Mary doesn't know what the difference between fiduciary and non-fiduciary means. I have an issue saying that one-time transactions should be exempt from fiduciary duties since they can be so incredibly damaging to clients. And I have an issue with the fact that Fred's never going to meet her again. So what does this mean? Well, it means, yet again, it is buyer beware. It means that you have the right to ask anyone you're thinking about giving your money to whether or not they hold a true fiduciary standard. And saying, oh, I act in your best interest is not good enough. It needs to be a true fiduciary standard. Or, you know, if you're good with this, then don't worry about it. I will worry about it. I will continue to track this and follow this. I really don't anticipate a good outcome here by my definition of what a good outcome would be, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens next, and I will certainly keep you in the loop.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I have to admit something to you. I absolutely love the state fair. I love the food. I love the animals. I even like the old-fashioned stuff, like the people who make pickles or make quilts. So anytime it's fair season, I'm excited, and I'm really hoping to get to go next Sunday. I wanted to compare investors to different kinds of people who attend the fair. And the first kind of investor heads straight for the midway. They like riding the rides. They're thrill seekers. They are invested in the latest, hottest, highest returning investments. And the problem is, if things don't work and they have a whole portfolio of thrill rides, they can get themselves into trouble. So a risk tolerance analysis for that thrill seeker might help keep them moderated, as might working with a certified financial planner practitioner. The second group of fair attendees, which are a little bit more like me, are going straight for the food. The best cinnamon rolls in the world are at the Oklahoma State Fair. So everybody gets their cinnamon roll. The line wraps around the block. So other investors are looking for the trendy things, those investments that all of their friends are talking about. There are a couple of things that are dangerous here. One is once everyone is talking about it, even if it was a good investment at the beginning, it likely costs too much money now because everybody's already in on it. The second problem can be that it can get very bubbly and very hype-ish. And you have to be careful when you're doing what everybody is doing because it may not work out well, and it very likely won't work out well in the end. Remember, people are never super excited about S&P 500 funds. It's always the latest hot stock. The next group of people go to the carnival games. And I like these quite a bit too, and in fact have a huge teddy bear covered in fabric that's covered in dollar bills and $100 bills. And his name is Prosper, and he is the logo of the business. He is our mascot, and my husband won him for me at the state fair. But the problem with getting all excited about carnival games is you're believing things that are actually not true. Right? Most people don't leave with the giant bears. So you have to do your own research and determine whether or not an investment is sound, not just listen to the barker who's trying to convince you that you too can win a 4-foot bear. Other people like the animals. And the thing about raising animals for the fair is the animals need to be a certain size, they need to be a certain weight, they need to be groomed, they need to be trained. So it's very important to know the time horizon of these animals. In the same way as when you're putting together a portfolio, you need to look at the time horizon of your needs. College funding and retirement funding have different time horizons. And for the portfolio to work at its best, those different time horizons both need to be taken into account. And then finally, there's the quilts. I like state fair quilts. I like state fair pickles. I like all of those things where people took a long time to make it happen. And when you're looking at investing for the long term, it's very important to understand that a lot of investing success is wrapped around having enough time and putting together a good diversified portfolio and giving it the time to meet your financial goals. So if you just want to go to the fair and forget about all of this, you should. If you want to ride the rides and eat the food and go to the Midway games and go see the quilts and the cows, then do it. But when you're thinking about your portfolio, think about the mistakes you can make if you go to the fair like different kinds of people and try to avoid making them.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I want to start by reminding you that not only is this a radio show, it's also a podcast. So if you ever want to go back and listen to a show again, or if you want to share this with people who aren't in your area, it is Ask Peggy About Your Money is the name of the podcast. Had I been thinking when I titled the radio show, I would have called it Ask Peggy About Your Money, too, because I just think it's a little friendlier, but I've totally missed the boat on that one. So it's Ask Peggy About Your Finances. But the podcast that you can listen to anywhere you listen to podcasts is Ask Peggy About Your Money. And it's the show, and I post whenever I have a new episode. So I also am just going to make a tiny little announcement related to my business. I have hired a young financial planner. She is 35. I am 59. And I'm very excited to have the next generation of the firm in place. And I think she's going to work out really good. And the reason I'm telling you this, because I never even use the name of the firm when I'm doing the show, because that's not the point of this. But your firm that you're using should have a succession plan. You know, it's great to have the older advisor with all that experience, but you need to find out what do they have in place in case they ever want to retire or, God forbid, die. So just be careful with that. Ask those questions, and they should be able to answer something and have it make a lot of sense. So the question I'm asking this week, and I am asking it because nobody asked me, but they should have, is, Peggy, what if I haven't withheld enough tax for this year's tax liability? Maybe something happened and you got some income and you know you haven't paid your taxes on it. Maybe you're worried that it's going to be April and you're going to owe a lot of money. So what you want to do is a rough estimate now of how much you think your taxes are going to be underpaid, because I've got a pretty easy solution, but you need to act quickly. So once you know how much tax needs to be withheld above and beyond what you've done, if you have it withheld from your paycheck, the IRS will count it as having been withheld evenly through the year. So what that means is if you owe $3,000 in taxes and you withhold an extra $1,000 in October, November, and December, the IRS isn't going to penalize you for not paying it the month it was due because it's been withheld from your paycheck. The reason you need to start quickly is I know it's very hard to find money out of just one check, right? First of all, the check might not be big enough for the tax liability. And second, you can't afford not to get a paycheck in, say, December. So you want to make sure if you need to pay a little bit of tax, you need to start doing it now before it gets super painful. Even if you can't handle the entire tax liability, anything you pay won't be accruing interest. So maybe you think you owe $2,000 and you can only pay $1,000. That's fine. And you can have it withheld from your paycheck. Contact HR, like soon, and they should be able to help you do it, even for a paycheck that you get at the beginning of the month. Other things you can do if the liability isn't quite that bad, make sure you've maxed as much of your retirement contributions as you can. If you can fund a deductible IRA, that would help. If you can put a little bit more into your company's your company's retirement plan, that will help as well. Additionally, if you are going to make charitable donations, you could cluster them into this year if you have a chance of itemizing your deductions. Now, I think I said the last time I did a live show, I don't mind the higher standard deductions because you're getting the same amount of money. You're just not having to do any work for it. So make sure you can deduct before you go to a whole lot of trouble, because you won't solve anything if you can't. But if you can, maybe cluster them to help this year's tax liability. But take action now.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.